Oh man, it's been so long, and between vacations and disease, we're back for a little Talk Nerdy to Me. Everybody, and welcome back to The More You Nerd, your new favorite podcast. My name is Drew, and joining me back from seas beyond, Miles, how are you, my friend?
I'm great. You know, I kind of wish I was still in seas beyond, just because, like, I don't know, I found something crazily, like, comforting about being on the open ocean. Yeah. It's pretty nice, and one of the things that I did, and Drew knows this, is each time that I stopped in a foreign country that I'd never been to, I put on a different Star Trek uniform shirt and acted like I was walking onto a new planet. And it was a very fun little treat for me.
I can't believe you bit my style so bad. Oh, no, I'm just kidding.
I don't think that's exactly what happened at all.
I'm glad that you're back. I'm excited for you to be back. Apologies last week. We were all getting ready to go, and then I got the vid. I got COVID again. So yeah. I was down for the count. So sorry. But as a result, we also didn't get a chance to do what we intended to do. This past time. So we're gonna do a little Talk Nerdy, and then we'll talk about what we are doing over the course of the next, I don't know, 6 or so weeks. It's gonna be pretty wild. So yeah, Miles, what you got going on, buddy?
You know, I know you talked about it. I knew we were gonna talk about it. So I kind of want to just jump right in and talk about a little movie that came out right as I was sailing home. And, you know, it's interesting because I feel like out of everyone that I know, I am probably the biggest apologist for New Trek.
Yes, you are.
And by that, I mean anything that has kind of come out in the Paramount Plus era. I have enjoyed all of it, and unashamedly so. And I mean, I know that there is, you know, consensus on different things. People love the third season of Picard. People love Lower Decks, and people love all of Strange New Worlds. And then it's a crapshoot, depending on who you talk to, on people's feelings on Discovery. I think that's pretty fair, right?
Yeah, I think that's fair.
I have loved all these things, and I was looking forward to what's probably one of, I think, I don't say the most eye-rolling, but I think it's the one aspect of Trek that I feel like most fans least want to dive into, and that is Section 31.
Yeah, so did you listen to my episode? I know I joked around with you.
I haven't had the chance
to. I didn't think you would. It's okay. I forgive you. But I talked about this a little bit in my solo dolo episode while you were gone. I didn't really go into the full background of Section 31, but effectively, I am one of those people that I liked the concept of Section 31 when it was introduced as a villain in Star Trek Deep Space Nine. I thought it was very, very interesting there.
And even then, still controversial.
It was very controversial then, as it was supposed to be.
Yes.
But even when it came back in a very similar role in an episode of Star Trek Enterprise, while Enterprise is its own, you know, slightly controversial
can of worms.
But when it appeared there, it was very much in line with what Section 31 had been. And believe it or not, even in Star Trek Into Darkness, Section 31 is portrayed in much that same way. However, in the Discovery universe, especially in season 2, they made the, quite frankly, bold decision to make Section 31 effectively Starfleet CIA, which it, quite honestly, that I actively dislike that. I don't like that at all. And I wish it wasn't the case. So when the character of Emperor Georgiou, played by Michelle Yeoh, who was introduced, Michelle Yeoh was introduced in the first episode of Star Trek Discovery as sort of the captain that the series main character, Michael Burnham, you know, was her captain. She looked up to her. They had spent years serving together. And spoiler warning for what is effectively an almost 10-year-old show at this point. I think Discovery's 10 years old now.
Is it really?
I don't know. Hang on.
I gotta... Let's see. Star Trek Discovery... 2017. So, yeah, we are two years away.
So it's close to 10 years.
Gosh!
That character is killed off in the opening... episodes, the opening kind of sort of two-part series opener, although as it is revealed through the course of the rest of the season, when the good old-fashioned mirror universe shows up, the mirror version of Captain Georgiou, Emperor Georgiou of the Terran Empire, becomes a whole thing and starts and comes back to our regular universe in Season 2 of Star Trek Discovery, and is working for Section 31, which is not a secret organization in the world of Discovery. It is just, everybody knows about it. It's just like their Black Ops team. And I've never liked that, because it's not what Section 31 was supposed to be.
Yeah, I mean, hilarious enough, I do agree with you. I don't dislike it, I think, as much as you do. And I think it fit the character of Georgiou very well. If they did, I feel like what they, you know, initially had intended to do with the character. And so for years at this point, Georgiou or Michelle Yeoh leaves the show in season three.
Yeah. So season three, there is a 1,000-year time jump in the show. Oh, no. Emperor Georgiou, because she's not from our universe, is suddenly having like weird, like strange medical incidents that are as a result of not being from our universe and being time displaced from the universe.
Which is fine. We see that there are people that I mean, spoiler warning for first season of Discovery, that is a thing. Of this universe having an effect on the physiology of people originally from the mirror universe.
Well, I mean, that's different, actually. If you're talking about the eye drop thing, that's just a weird random change they made for people in the mirror universe that, and I don't like this either, that it's literally a darker universe, so the characters from the mirror universe struggle to the brighter lights of our universe. I actively hate that.
I love it. I think it's so stupid best way.
It's extremely stupid, and that was not at all consistent with how the mirror universe has ever been shown. But
to be perfectly honest, though, every time the mirror universe makes an appearance in Star Trek, it's always different.
Well, it had really only appeared a couple of times before then, and it was pretty consistent in the Deep Space Nine era.
It was consistent in Deep Space Nine with Deep Space Nine.
Well, it's also consistent with the only other appearance at that point, which was the one episode
of the original series.
Anyway, she left Discovery at that point, and shortly thereafter, it was announced that there was going to be a Section 31 TV show that she was going to star in as Georgiou, who has already worked for Section 31, and. It was going to be this whole thing. But then, I don't know if you guys, heard about, you know, a little movie called Everything Everywhere All at Once. Which interestingly enough, it seems like Star Trek Section 31 is trying to throw into the air. get it. It's a bad joke anyway. Michelle Yeoh just became too famous. she was already famous. She was already
A global superstar.
She was already a global superstar and was guest cast for sure on Star Trek Discovery in its first season. But then, you know, she goes and wins an Oscar and she's on everybody's radar and she's working more than she has in years. And so over that time, that Section 31 TV show kept getting pushed back and pushed back. And then the strikes happened and COVID happened before that. And it was a whole thing, they took what they had for the first season of a Section 31 show. And they condensed it into a 90-minute TV movie.
Yeah, I mean, that is accurate. This absolutely feels like, it doesn't even feel like they condensed it. It feels like they filmed the summary for the show. Like, it almost feels like a concept pitch for a show. And I think what will surprise a lot of people is how middle of the road I am on this one.
Yeah, so this is where I want to hear your take. People can go back and listen to my take, and I'm probably going to reiterate some of it as we talk here. But yeah, go ahead, drop it on me. What's your take?
So the biggest thing,
spoilers for Section 31 again.
Yeah, spoilers for Section 31, and obviously, if you're interested in seeing it, please just watch it. I mean, honestly, watch Star Trek. Watch Star Trek on Paramount Plus. The more people watching Star Trek stuff means we get more Star Trek stuff.
Yeah.
Even though I know like three things are in the works right now. So
thank God it's only 90 minutes and not a second longer.
So my biggest problem with Section 31 is because they clearly used whatever they had at the time to just push to publication, which I think was a mistake because none of the flavor, the character, and just what makes that universe so special is present in this movie. You could have changed the names of every character and changed the names of the types of ships, and you'd have been like, okay, cool, I just watched this little sci-fi movie. It does not feel distinctly Star Trek at all.
Exactly. And that was by design. They wanted, because Michelle Yeoh is an international superstar, Oscar winner, on the top of her game, they wanted it to be able, you know, they wanted people to be able to watch it and not have to feel like they needed to watch hours and hours of Star Trek to get into it.
Which is perfectly fine.
Except they didn't do it well.
That's the main thing is it's okay that it doesn't, I don't need for it to feel like a Discovery spinoff movie. I don't need to feel like I'm rewarded by having seen every episode of Star Trek that came before. But I do want, even if it's not going to be placed on a ship and we're not boldly going, I do want it to feel like it's within the Star Trek universe. And to be perfectly honest, it doesn't. If you take out the insignias and you take out some of the names and places and maybe a ship, it honestly doesn't feel like it's part of the Star Trek universe at all. It feels like it was a high budgeted TV movie, like sci-fi heist type of situation. It's got very much a Guardians of the Galaxy feel that it's supposed to be all these misfits, which again is not what Section 31 is about.
Yes.
And I think, again, that's a mistake. They also, because they don't try to tether it too much to what's come before, everything that makes the Empress version of Georgiou special and interesting is absent in this movie. She doesn't feel like herself.
I'm so glad to hear you say all this. I was a little worried. I wasn't that worried that you're going to come in and be like, I loved it. But
I did like it. I did enjoy it. I mean, I certainly wasn't like, oh, thank God it was only 90 minutes. But I was really disappointed by it just because, and I mean this in a way to not sound like I'm being Snyder cynical. And again, that's why I prefaced, I'm the biggest New Trek apologist that I know. And what sucks is they also waste a pretty good cast, including Sam Richardson, who they just let be Sam Richardson, which is all I want.
Yeah, it's fine. Like, Sam Richardson was getting a pretty nice paycheck for that, I'm sure. And
he was good.
He was
fine. I liked him.
The thing about it to me is that everything you said is correct. They waste the character of Georgiou Namely, and this is the thing that I harped on a lot in my review. So the whole MacGuffin of this is a super powerful weapon called the Godsend. Godsend.
I thought that was funny. I did like that little bitty moment.
You're wrong about that, but
I sat through that movie and I was like, okay, Drew hated that. Drew definitely hated that. Like I know you well enough to know like there are things that like novel dumb things that I like that grind your gears.
It doesn't earn the dumb stuff by having any, like, if the dumb stuff in the movie is the best stuff in the movie, then it doesn't earn anything. But anyway,
I mean, you know, you are not wrong. And that is a huge problem.
Here's my big problem with it. So they base this whole thing around a redemption story for Georgiou. Which is already happening in the show. She even uses the phrase grew a conscience, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Uh-huh. Except they never for a single second on screen imply that one, she has grown a conscience, or two, give her any reason to grow a conscience.
So that is the big problem here, because, and this goes back to the fact that Georgiou is not written like Georgiou. There's no dimension to the character.
And when I say, let me finish my last point with this, because the biggest problem with it for me is this MacGuffin of the Godsend is that the Section 31 goes to Georgiou's space casino, whatever mm-hmm. it is, Space Vegas, because they're trying to stop a biological weapons deal that it turns out just so happens to be this weapon that Georgiou had created in the Mirror Universe that has found its way into our universe. She doesn't know it's there. She is not involved at all in the transaction that is supposedly going to take place on her station. It's like that being there and her being there are completely random and arbitrary. And it's like, mm-hmm. if you're trying to tell a story about her redemption, you should make that a key part of it. Like,
well, not only that, but like there's this kind of almost joke that, you know, one, everyone knows exactly who she is. Okay. But they all, the joke is that, oh, she's the baddest of the bad. She's, you know, evil. You know,
we still haven't found all the pieces of the guy you replaced at this station.
Like, and I mean, they do it to the point where it's almost a joke, and they don't allow Michelle Yeoh to actually be the character. And that's what makes it more feel like stunt casting than anything else, is they just have her be Michelle Yeoh.
Yeah.
Michelle Yeoh with a little attitude. And and the story doesn't matter. It's, yeah, their Section 31 is, it makes a deal with Georgiou, which another weird thing about Section 31 in this is how absent it is. And there's only one person who's supposed to be Starfleet, which I was under the impression that Section 31 was entirely Federation.
That's the thing. Section 31, prior to the Discovery retcon of what that organization is, was completely a secret.
I'm just talking about that.
Even know it existed.
I'm not even talking about that. I'm just talking about the fact that it's they're all supposed to be Federation. And here they have the one Starfleet person, and like that's a joke. And
not only do they have the one Starfleet person, it's at the time Lieutenant Rachel Garrett, who will later go on to be a captain of the USS Enterprise C, featured in yesterday's Enterprise, who sacrifices her ship, her life, and her crew to save a group of Klingons from attacking Romulans, that ends up warming relations between the Federation and the Klingons to the point where in Next Generation they are allies. Her whole deal is huge, and her whole deal in this movie is that, oh, I don't have any confidence, I'm too stuck up, and then Michelle Yeoh telling her she's a chaos goblin, which is that, And then her, and then her later say, Rachel Garrett herself later saying that chaos is her friends with benefits. Not like all of these lines, like it's, I get what they were trying to do. It's just,
The lines work in a better movie.
The lines work in a better movie, and better lines would work better. Like this is, it's stuff that feels like a bad Guardians of the Galaxy, the Suicide Squad ripoff put in a Star Trek world, that it's just, but the thing is, and again, we talked about this. There were moments of this movie that I enjoyed, that I did laugh at, and
yeah, you know, no, there's good stuff there's in good here. Stuff I don't want to sound like I'm harping on it, because that's not really who I like to be, especially when talking about Star Trek.
But when it comes down to it for me, and people, you know, you could find all sorts of commentary about this movie out right now. It's a whole thing about, oh, it's the worst Star Trek movie that's ever been made. It's the worst Star Trek movie that's ever been made. No, it's not.
It's absolutely not. And I always hate that conversation when something new comes out these days, because everything's become the comment section of life. Yeah. So everything has to be either the best or the worst. You can't have something just be like, it's fine. It's a 6 out of 10. You know,
what this is it's not good. It is oppressively mid. So middling and so lame that it barely registers. And thankfully, it doesn't have so much Star Trek in it, because it doesn't really ruin anything about Star Trek, because there's just not enough Star Trek in it.
Yeah, I mean, and they can even see where they like desperately put this little stinger ending where like, oh, maybe we'll make more. And I'm just like, please don't.
First off, I hated that too. Because I knew they weren't going to do it, but they had the sacrificial ending for two characters, and then a character passes out and wakes up. It's like, you guys are alive? Yeah, you got us out in the last second. It's like, okay, whatever. Ruined it. This movie also didn't know where it was supposed to, or when it was supposed to be, because the character San, which he was fine. It was an interesting enough antagonist, but I feel like they needed a little bit more to it.
It's just one of those things. This is the biggest problem with the movie for me, and then I'm gonna stop really harping that hard. Is not at no point did I not know what was gonna happen immediately following what I was watching.
Exactly. It is so obvious in all of its storytelling. There aren't any twists, including the stuff that's supposed to be twists. But
it's not that that's necessarily bad. Something can be, you know, obvious and still be good. Like, I mean, there are plenty of things that are like, yeah, this is a time-worn tale, but it's very well done.
Yeah.
But that's not the case here.
But what I'm saying about the character San is that San had faked his death before Georgiou came to our universe.
Mm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah, you did the math from yesterday, and I was like, wait a minute.
And that was back, you know, at least 10 years before the time frame of the original series.
Uh-huh.
This movie takes place like 50 or 60 years after that. And San, totally fine. Then, I mean, obviously there's, you know, he could have been put in cryogenic stasis. He could have been in a time warp or, you know, whatever, but
it doesn't matter.
And that's the thing. It doesn't matter. This movie does not matter. It can easily be ignored because it doesn't make any impact on anything in the world of Star Trek.
Well, and I think it's the biggest bummer for me, because like, even looking at like the posters and stuff for the movie, and even when I log on to Paramount Plus and I bring up the movie, which was a little more difficult than I expected, so I feel like they're kind of burying this one now, because it wasn't on like even on the Experience Star Trek collection where they have everything Star Trek. I had to really look for this movie. The poster does not look like it belongs to the franchise.
It was on the main page of Paramount Plus
I came to it a week later, but still, this is an original Star Trek movie. You think you'd be pushing it more than a week. It's very disappointing, just because, you know, I want this franchise to thrive. And for the most part, to me, they've been doing such a great job. And I mean, we got the next season of what many consider one of the best Star Trek shows of all time, you know, around the corner. And another one of the best Star Trek shows of all time just ended for now. So Yeah, I see your Rita Strong shirt. Yeah, it was very, very disappointing. It's, I mean, I kind of went in with higher expectations because I know me, and I'm usually a lot more forgiving compared to most Star Trek people. I also think one of the biggest problems was that they tried to emulate Marvel and they tried to emulate Star Wars, and that just doesn't work for this universe. There's a way to make a heist movie in Star Trek work. They just didn't make the real effort. And the people even behind it, like, you know, you had a TV writer who had worked on Discovery, but I mean, I think they just wrote an episode and they were like a consultant.
Yeah, I don't know the full story with that.
And it's not that it was like the worst direction I've ever seen. I mean, it was fine, but it was just this person had directed a plenty of Discovery. I think it's a good looking movie for the most part, but
effects wise it's good. Costuming was really good. I'm a little disappointed we didn't get to see a Starfleet uniform at all in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Because this movie takes place in the sort of lost era of Star Trek, in the decades between the beginning flashback sequence of Star Trek Generations and the first episode of The Next Generation, which there's like a 60-year time gap there.
Yeah.
And, you know, I would have loved to see the one Starfleet character wearing a Starfleet uniform.
A Starfleet uniform.
But we don't see it. So.
Yeah. And that was the thing. I knew when we were doing a Talk Nerdy, that's what I wanted to talk about, because I know that, like, I've been such a champion for New Trek from the first episode of Discovery onward. Because I loved Discovery, and I loved Picard, and I love Strange New Worlds and Lower Decks and the shorts. But yeah, this is the first true full miss for me. Like and I think it's worse that it's not a miss because it's actively awful. Like, this is not Nemesis, you know. It's like you said, it's just so mid.
Yeah.
And it really does feel like a faceless sci-fi TV movie. And ultimately what's so disappointing.
And when I say that I'm glad it was only 90 minutes, I mean it, because if it had been any longer, I can only imagine how much more they would have tried to shoehorn in another character's sad backstory that doesn't make any sense.
Maybe Tim Robinson would have popped up.
Maybe if Tim Robinson had popped up as like a Ferengi that's like,
oh my god, that's perfect. That's perfect. That is perfect.
Look at it. I need the Latinum.
Doing the, you know, yeah, I would have, that would have saved the movie for me. I mean, obviously Sam Richardson does not need Tim.
The problem is, if he had shown up as a Ferengi, I'd have been so mad, because the Ferengi weren't known to the Federation until
at the time.
Next Generation.
So. That's true. Doesn't mean they didn't exist, though. So,
they definitely,
you know,
existed. I mean, they attacked the NX-01 Enterprise in Star Trek Enterprise. They just, Clint Howard was on that ship, and never said
the name
of their alien species. So,
yeah. But yeah, that was one thing I did want to, you know, kind of the elephant in the room. Unfortunate. I wish it was better. But onward and upward, you know?
Hopefully. upward. We'll see.
We haven't taken the time, and I don't know if we're going to before the, I mean, maybe we'll record a special episode. I know I think we did when the original launch happened, but we haven't talked too much about the Switch 2.
Yeah, I mean, we still don't know a ton about it.
I know from the specs that I've seen from like the Consumer Expo or whatever, like it's definitely supposed to be a next generation system for the first time in, well, since maybe the N64.
To put it in layman's terms, supposedly it is going to be PS4 power, but portable.
Which is fine.
I mean, I look at it like this. I have had a Steam Deck for a while now, and I like the Steam Deck, but the Steam Deck, you know, certain games you can really tell.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that I like a lot about the Switch, and I've always liked a lot about the Switch, is the easiness it is to just dock it and play it on the TV. to have Steam Deck-ish power in portable and a much easier way to dock it to a TV, because I do dock my Steam Deck to a computer monitor. It just, you know, some games look worse when you output from the Steam Deck, and yeah, some games look fine.
Mine stays docked to a 55-inch monitor, and most time it's fine, but sometimes it's not. It's gotten better. It's only gotten better. But I also, because I love the way the Switch feels, I love how light it is. It's a lot more comfortable to play. Not that the Steam Deck is actually uncomfortable, but it's just bulky enough to like sometimes be like, ah, you know,
it's heavy. And because of how it works, battery life is either excellent or absolutely terrible.
Yeah.
It's very, very difficult to tell the two between, but the Switch 2,
I wish was called the Super Nintendo Switch.
I look, man, you're preaching to the crowd with me. I'm just glad it's not called the Switch U.
You know what? I would have even taken that, because they've never done a number before. Well, I mean, N64, I guess, but like,
but that was because it was 64-bit,
right? Yeah, so you have Nintendo, you have Super Nintendo,
Famicom, Super Famicom, NES, Super NES, Nintendo 64, GameCube, Wii U,
Switch,
okay, Game Boy,
and even with the Game Boys, Game Boy Color,
Game Boy Advance, Game Boy Pocket, Game Boy Advance, in there,
Game Boy Advance SP, Game Boy Micro. The DS, the 3DS, the DS Lite, the DSi, the 2DS. Like, there's never been like a sequel in number before, and I don't like it. I frankly, it's one of those things where like PlayStation can number theirs because that's what they've done since the day one. Everyone else needs to like step up. Xbox needs to figure out what they are.
Xbox needs to solve.
Xbox is the most like Elon Musk SEO kind of a naming system that I've ever seen.
Yeah. Xbox, like, Xbox 360, Xbox One, Xbox Series.
Yeah, Series X or S. Xbox One is the most maddening. I remember when that was announced, and I was so irritated.
Me too. I never owned an Xbox One. I never owned an original Xbox. I had a 360, and I currently have both a Series X and Series S that don't get played a lot. But
I'm thinking about trading mine in while GameStop stores are still existing. Just because I never use it, and I stopped using Game Pass, and
I did play a couple of hours of the Indiana Jones game.
I hear good things.
It's pretty fun. Machine Games made that. Machine Games, you know what they don't like? Nazis. Hate Nazis. Fascists in general. These are the guys that made the Wolfenstein remakes of the last couple of years. And so they go from those games to making Indiana Jones, where you spend the entirety of the game hitting fascists in the back of a head with a club or a bottle or a cane or whatever.
Can't imagine why that feels so good right about now.
You know, it's one of those things, man. It's like,
But it's also a timed exclusive. I think it's coming to the PS5 this spring, so I'll probably just grab it on that.
It could be announced for PS5 as early as tomorrow as we are recording this. So
I thought it was already announced.
I mean, release date.
Oh yeah, I feel like I heard it was supposed to be spring or 6 months or whatever. So
yeah, there's a PlayStation 5 State of Play tomorrow at the time that we're recording. So I'm assuming it's going to be a part of that.
The one thing that I know a lot of people love to make jokes about is the new way that they are having the Joy-Cons attach. I kind of feel like. So instead of the slide method that we've had since 2017, they are going to have more of a magnet clip, and you kind of just slap them onto your system. A lot of people were talking about, oh, well, you'll probably damage them. Look, I thought the same thing when they announced the slide mechanic for the original Joy-Cons. I thought those things would get ripped apart all the time.
It's all going to be how powerful the magnets are. And we don't know that yet. It looks like it's going to be pretty powerful, which it's like, I hope I never have to have a pacemaker because I'll never be able to play a Nintendo system again. But they look powerful enough that there is a button on the back of the Joy-Con that is like a lever that pushes the Joy-Con out so you can actually pull it off, which is like, I don't know. I will need to see it. They certainly, I mean, to be fair to Nintendo, they've been in the handheld gaming market for a long time. They know how to make a gaming portable that will last. Granted, the Switch is a little bit of a different animal because of its size and weight and all of that, but I'll see.
Yeah, I still wish that every console would learn that, hey, offer some customization. Like, I know down the line, Nintendo always puts out multicolored Joy-Cons. Launching with, like, what looks to be just black ones that have, like, a blue kind of, like, ring around one of them, and I think a red around another. I can't remember.
It's like a pinkish. It's the same blue
same
and
color scheme as
color
from
scheme
before.
That they have before. But it's just circles around the joysticks, which, honestly, I think it looks pretty sharp.
I don't think it looks bad. I just always like to have some customization options. And I know it's the launch, but at this point in time, like, I feel like that's something you could do. Like, I am mad that, like, I still have, like, in box the Animal Crossing pastel ones that I haven't busted out from my original Switch yet.
Well, you know what? Don't, because they'll get screwed up and you'll have joystick errors and all sorts of stuff.
You know what's weird is I've had drift on one of my original launch Joy-Cons, and I've never had a problem otherwise. And it wasn't even a bad drift.
I've had it on three. It's
I mean, no, I just wild. I've lucked out.
Yeah. We don't know yet, but they might the new ones might have the Hall effect sticks, which would mean they don't ever get drift, which would be
great.
Nice. But a feature that has seemingly been confirmed by later stuff, and I'm honestly kind of shocked and want to see how it works. You're going to be able to use these things like a mouse. That's wild.
Yeah. Which also means more, I think, more integration of like PC type titles. I mean, everything's speculation at this point, but I have seen a lot of leakers who have a pretty stellar reputation say that things like Halo, because Nintendo's been working with Microsoft on stuff, will be on the Switch too. Which, I mean, obviously, Halo's whatever, but like still, like, the fact that, like, these kind of things are going to be popping up on a Nintendo system, and I mean, obviously it's too late for something like Destiny, but you know, if I could have had Destiny portable.
You know what I'd love to see? Baked in Switch game? Mario Paint.
Mario Paint would be great.
Mario Paint with that Super Nintendo mouse that plugged in. Mario Paint.
That would be awesome. Yeah, I've definitely seen, I mean, I'm obviously no one knows what the launch is going to look like. We're going to have our first proper look at the Switch 2 April 2nd at 9 a.m., I think.
I don't know. They're doing some hands-on experiences the months after that. None of them are coming anywhere near me, so...
Look, yeah. I know what circuses those things are. I'm not gonna. I remember waiting in line at PAX every year for the Switch area, even when there's not much for them to show, and it's always a madhouse because Nintendo, you know, people love Nintendo.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'm frankly shocked that we got in. I don't think you were there that year, but the Animal Crossing area.
Yeah, I wasn't there that year.
But I think that I've said this, you know, in our Discord, and I've said this to you, but this is probably the last launch console I'm going to be getting it for the foreseeable future, because, you know, I've learned with the last generation that I didn't need to rush to get an Xbox Series X or even a PS5 for that matter. Outside of like a souped up new Steam Deck, which is still several years off, I think this is going to the last launch console I'm going to be getting for quite some time.
I think hindsight is kind of weird for the PS5 because it launched in the middle of COVID.
Of COVID, sure.
And as a result, one, it was hard to get them to begin with, but and as a result, they made a lot of titles that were going to be PS5 exclusive. They kind of retroactively also put them out on PS4, which extended the life of the PS4 beyond what they intended.
Yeah, PS4 is still getting titles. Like, Marvel vs. Capcom, I think it's technically a PS4 game. I don't think it's a PS5 disc.
I don't know. Could be. But, you know, it's good to, it's good to see, you know. But that's another thing. It's like, at a certain point, we're kind of capping out on what these systems are going to be new and provide. And like,
PS5
is definitely an upgrade over the PS4, especially if you're on a 4K TV.
Sure.
But it's,
but it's an incremental leap. The PS3 was the last generational jump that seemed to matter. I mean, there was a difference from 3 to 4, but it was smaller than 2 to 3.
Yeah.
Which, and because you look at 1, 2, and 3, and those are clear generations and clear differences. You look at 3, 4, and 5, and yeah, there are some titles that you can tell, obviously, but it's a that margin is much more narrow.
For sure. And it's also just because some of the most popular games, like The Last of Us, was a PS3 game.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I played it on PS4 and now it's on PS5.
Oh, yeah. I mean, luckily they've kind of learned after the last couple of generations. Oh, yeah, we should probably make these somewhat backwards compatible if we can. And I know that they have announced that Switch 2 is mostly backwards compatible for Switch titles, which I am so into.
Yeah. Well, I mean, backwards compatibility is one of those things where, you know, the Switch was the first Nintendo console in a while that wasn't backwards compatible.
Yeah.
Because obviously
they went back to cartridges.
Yeah. In NES, SNES, Nintendo 64 were not. Game Boy Advance was.
Yep.
DS was for Game Boy Advance. 3DS was for DS. Wii was for GameCube. Wii U was for Wii. I don't think it could play GameCube games, though.
The Wii could.
The Wii U,
I don't believe it did.
But the Switch moving to back to carts.
Cartridges.
Away from
optical media. I do love they did that. It's such a Nintendo move to be like, you know what? We're going back to the old reliable.
Well, to be honest, I mean, it's the Switch is as much an evolution of the 3DS as it is of the Wii and Wii U. It's sort of
combines the two. Yeah, I mean, you can tell that they only released the Wii U because they were still working on the Switch, which would come out like 4 or 5 years later.
It was a short lifespan for the Wii.
Yeah, it was like 2012, I think, is when the Wii U came out, I think.
It was because one of the first episodes of The More You Nerd, I want to say it's maybe episode 2, was called Wii U and Doctor Who, where Mike and I talked about the announcement of the Wii U.
Oh, that's funny. You can tell that they had the pressure to release an HD system. So they cobbled something together that was good enough. And I mean, because they announced the Switch in, I think, was it the fall of 2016?
I can't remember now.
Or maybe the spring of 2016, because it was well before the launch date, because it launched in 2017.
It was rumored for a while too.
I remember seeing
like fake 3D renders of what this thing was going to look like. Oh man.
You know, I remember because I remember, you know, because the Wii U had kind of rocked so hard. It fell pretty hard. But I liked the Wii U and had my Wii U for quite some time. There were so many people who thought this is the end of Nintendo. They thought legit. I had arguments with friends who were like, like, even when the Switch commercial came out, which looked promising, everyone was like, I mean, yeah, if they do it right, yeah, it'll be okay. But I think Nintendo's, you know, done. And lo and behold, one of the most successful consoles of all time.
I mean, it hasn't outsold the PS2 yet.
No.
But it's close.
But it's closer than anyone else. Yeah. And it's also, like, in terms of, like, usability, in that respect, my favorite console. Like, I love the PS2. That's, you know, goated forever because of the era it was from. But in terms of just, like, using it, I love the Switch. If I could have the Switch give me the original PlayStation startup music, I'd be in business.
I play a lot of original PlayStation games on the Switch, so.
Yeah, right. You just want that little noise. But yeah, I am really, really optimistic about the Switch 2. I'm really excited about a more powerful, better battery life version of the Switch. It will probably, like I said, probably the last console I get for quite some time. And I'm completely happy with that. I'm very, very excited about that.
Well, we'll see. I'm excited. I'm looking forward to it. I will certainly be trying to get it day one if I can.
They have said that they are not going to have a supply problem.
I mean, they always say that.
Yeah, but Nintendo's been pretty good about it.
We'll see. It's not,
I didn't have a problem getting a Switch the last time, so I'm hoping. And they said they've made even more for this launch.
It's not necessarily Nintendo that's the problem, because scalper's going to scalp.
That's true. Those are the main two things I really wanted to talk about, is the Switch 2 and Section 31. I wish I was more positive about Section 31, but, you know, it this stuff happens. It's not like I've never disliked an episode or a movie from Star Trek before, you know?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it is what it is. But let's stick on video games, Miles, because let's actually talk about what we are going to be doing for the next few weeks.
Let's do that.
And you guys will have to forgive me for a second as I do something that I've not done middle of the road before.
End of the road. I don't know why it popped in my head, but
oh, I've got to quit and reopen. Okay, hang on just a second, guys. Okay, sorry about that brief pause for technical difficulties as I needed to change a setting since I've redone this computer. Oh, here we go, gang. Miles doesn't know what's happening right now, but I do. Because for the next few weeks on The More You Nerd, we are going to talk about video games. And we're specifically going to talk about independent video games. What's an independent video game, you might ask? Well, it's a game that's not put out by a major publisher. Maybe, you know, it's an indie game. You guys know what an indie game is. So what I am going to debut to Miles that unfortunately you guys can't see is the Wheel of Indies.
Love it. I was hoping it would be something like this, and you did not disappoint me at all.
So we have created a very, very big list of indie games that I have put on a big wheel to randomly decide what we're going to do. And first things first, I'm going to shuffle this so that they all end up in a different order. And we are going to spin the wheel to figure out what the first game on the Wheel of Indies is. Now, this is not an exhaustive list. This is a list. And in fact, Miles, I'm going to allow both of us to have a veto for the Wheel of Indies if something pops up that we don't want to cover.
Okay.
If there's something you guys want to make sure is on the list for next week when we roll the wheel again, then you need to let us know, and we'll tell you how to do that in just a few minutes. But let's spin to win the Wheel of Indies.
Oh boy, oh boy, oh boy. What are we getting?
Our first game is...
Ah,
Jusant.
which I have heard many, many great things about. I think it won several awards.
I don't know what this game is.
Yeah, it was very, very popular when it came out. I think it's a climbing platforming game.
It is a 2023 puzzle platforming game published by Don't Nod. The player controls a lone wanderer as they climb a desolate tower filled with artifacts of civilizations long past.
Yeah, this I remember a lot of my friends going nuts about when it came out. And I believe I have it because of either a Humble Bundle or a Fanatical Bundle or some sort of bundle that I purchased.
It may also be on Xbox Game Pass.
It was at some point. I don't know if it still is.
I'm sorry for you now, but
I can see that.
Oh, that's right. You're looking at
it. So one of the things Drew and I have talked about doing this many times, but while we do focus on obviously classic games and games that we love or games that we want to investigate,
it is still on Game Pass. So
okay, so yeah, if you have Game Pass, then but play along with us. One of the things that I think where video games are creatively thriving the most is the indie game market. There are countless amazing creators and titles out there, and I thought, you know, I know that Drew and I do tend to focus on TV and movies a lot because it's the easier to do. And we are certainly aware of that. So we do try to pepper in, you know, comics and games and stuff when we can. I am so excited to do this because we were both talking about how we had these exhaustive Steam libraries of backlogged games that we will not play unless someone makes us, and for no other reason other than there's so much of it, and you're also trying to keep up with what you want to play at the time. It's been what, 2 weeks since I've been able to pop into Metaphor, and you know I'm still burning through that game. But I wanted an excuse, and this podcast was always great for doing that, an excuse to kind of barrel through some indie games. And we have talked about doing various types of game challenges over the holidays. Drew had a really good idea that I do want us to do sometime that's not indie game specific, but it was a cool idea.
It's to try to get through games that have been in our backlog for so long, but are really, really long typically and hard to commit to doing in a week to talk about on a show.
Right.
May show up later on this year as we sort of nailed.
Yeah, down. But I did want to give us the opportunity. I'm like, yeah, let's kind of take some out of this backlog. Let's at least play some of these games. We don't have to get super far in them, you know, just whatever you can do. Most of these, I think, are Steam Deck verified. And just, yeah, play some indie games and talk about them. And you know, especially when the AAA market kind of feels, you know, either things that we want to play are getting ported and remastered,
yeah.
But like new games, I mean, Metaphor was great. Alan Wake 2 was great, but like there's been a lot of AAA stuff that has just felt all the same, super boring, and not very innovative and creative like they used to be. Even like Final Fantasy 16, I haven't played it. Everything I saw looked pretty basic, and that franchise used to be really forward thinking. And
Final Fantasy 16 is a whole other topic. It's a great game. It is a game that
it looked like a game that was embarrassed to be an RPG.
Yeah, I wouldn't say that. I will also say that the voice actor for Clive, the main character in Final Fantasy 16, never shuts up on social media about Final Fantasy 8 specifically.
I know, and I love that. I love that about him.
It is a game that is great, but its combat system is not as deep as it wants to be.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, it's not as deep as it wants to be sounds like the general consensus of that game.
Yeah, it's a great game. It's a great story. I really, really enjoyed it. It's just, it became, I don't want to do this same type of battle over and over and over again.
Yeah. I'll get to it eventually. Eventually, it'll be like $5 to $10, and I will play it. But it is not this day.
Nope. So with that said, gang, we are going to talk about Jusant next week. You can find that on Steam. It's on Xbox Game Pass or just PC PSN. Game Pass. It's everywhere. Yeah, that's going to be it. For the More You Nerd this week, if you would like to reach out to us, you can find us at themoreyounerd.com, where you can find this and every other episode of the show that we've ever put out going back 13 years. I can't believe this show's a teenager. I can't believe.
Yeah,
I can't believe my son's a teenager. My son revealed to me today that he's played Doom, and he complained that the version of Doom he played was based off the old shareware version. He didn't he didn't know what shareware was, but he just knew that he couldn't play a level past Knee Deep in the Dead, which is like, oh my man, you just name checked an old school Doom level. I'm so proud.
So, that takes me back.
yeah. So with that said, of course, you can find us at themoreyounerd.com. You can email us themoreyounerd@gmail.com. That's themoreyounerd@gmail.com. You can find us on Blue Sky at themoreyounerd. Go to CosmicCrit.com. Cosmic Crit is our sister show where we play the Starfinder RPG and have done so for a number of years. It's very awesome. If you go to CosmicCrit.com, look in the upper right-hand corner of that site and look for the Cosmic Crit Discord. This is a great place if you want to play Starfinder or Pathfinder or other games. You can go and find a group there, or you could just come and talk to me and Miles all day while we're bored at work. So that's CosmicCrit.com. Look for that Discord link in the upper right-hand corner. And now, gang, we end the show, as we always do, with a rousing
Nerd out. Tuner for y'all.